Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, April 10th. Some scientific scenarios tell you that something can happen, but they can't say whether it'll happen in an hour or maybe in 25 years. Well, with us now is the Pulitzer, Peabody, and Polk Prize-winning science journalist Lori Garrett. It was in 1994 that she published a book called The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance. And yes, she was on this show for the book shortly after it came out. 25 years later, we got COVID-19. Now Lori Garrett has a cover story in the May issue of The New Republic about how President Trump and Xi Jinping set the stage together for the coronavirus pandemic. Hi, Lori. Thanks for coming back on with us.
Hi, Brian. It's a sad joy to be on your show.
Simply put, your thesis is that Xi Jinping and Donald Trump acted in very similar authoritarian-style ways, allowing the virus to take root more than it had to. So let's start with Xi Jinping. As you describe, he initially tried to repress news of the true danger in his country. Can you take us back to the beginning of that and explain how?
What we know is that the virus first emerged sometime in November in Wuhan, that there were cases of spread of this strange new pneumonia throughout Wuhan all through the month of December, that there were physicians and lab technicians doing analysis who said this looks a lot like SARS. The symptoms are similar to SARS, which, of course, China went through in 2003 and covered up when it started in 2002. And they could see that in lab analysis, it looked a little like the SARS virus. And so there was already a percolating sense of concern and fear among healthcare workers, which came to a head on December 30th when one particular physician, Li Wenliang, posted in an internal medical chat room, not to the general public, important point, but to warn his fellow physicians, hey, you know, I think there's something out there. It looks a lot like SARS. And here from one of my medical colleagues is a sample lab report that came back on one of these patients that says it tests similarly to the SARS virus. He and seven other physicians that worked with him were reprimanded severely, were brought before authorities. They had to sign statements that they were liars, that they were rumor mongers. Li Wenliang famously contracted the virus from one of his patients and died on February 7th of COVID.
He's that ophthalmologist in his 30s who died, right, after having discovered the
34
virus?
34 years old. 34 years old and very healthy otherwise. And all of the other, he has now been officially declared a national martyr, and he's now got heroic status. But he certainly never experienced that from the state while he was alive, nor did any of the other physicians and journalists who were trying to tell the truth. One of those journalists has never been seen again. He was removed from his home in Wuhan and has, quote-unquote, disappeared. And there was tremendous repression of social media that was executed all across China so that you could watch in real time. If you could read Chinese or at least have a sense of what was going across, you could watch Chinese social media and see in real time postings disappear because they had keywords in them, SARS, pneumonia, Wuhan pneumonia, so, any keyword that the artificial intelligence would pick up and pop out.
So and why people, would Xi Jinping and his government have done that? Because if they had any real sense that the virus was as contagious and deadly as it is, they would have wanted to stop it and contain it rather than cover up word of it and let it get out.
Well, one of the things I spent a lot of time digging on, and mind you, I had a bit of a head start because I was in China in 2003 covering SARS. and went back several times to sort of retell the SARS story, talk to people who'd been in the middle of it, including the now sort of leader of China's anti-COVID effort, Zhang Nanshan, who was the first in Guangzhou to identify SARS in 2003. Mm-hmm. So I was sensitized. I knew how the government responded to SARS, which was a lockdown of the nation, which was lying, cover-up, repression of reporters. Once it's made public, then turn around and repress the whole nation, shut it all down. So I knew that that's what was coming, and I was paying attention to all of that at the time. But it's very interesting. We now know that on January 7th, which crucially is a date 1 week after the physician said, you know, there's a covered-up problem here, and then on New Year's Eve, our time, the government of Wuhan officially acknowledges that they do have some strange new disease. They emphatically insist that it's not SARS and it's nothing like SARS, and don't worry, we've got it all under control. People are only getting it from animals in this animal market, and we've shut the market down, so there's nothing to look at here. You know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. But on January 7th, Xi Jinping goes into the State Council in a very important then-secret meeting and says, what's going on in Wuhan is so serious that I'm taking charge. So here you have the head of state of the second largest and most powerful country in the world, saying, largest economy, saying, you know, I'm personally intervening in what we're telling the rest of the world is a tiny little outbreak that's only associated with an animal market. Obviously, he already knew and had access to data that was saying something very different. Yet, they continued all the way up until January 20th to give what we now know was completely false data to the World Health Organization. So that day after day, the numbers didn't seem to budge. Day after day, it was always less than 50 people supposedly infected. A couple of times, the numbers even went backwards. These alleged cumulative totals got reported lower. Oh, we made a mistake. This one was just a routine pneumonia. So, we're taking it off the list.
So when Trump and his allies say, we blame China because they let this out through that cover-up, they may be distracting attention from Trump's own failures. But they're also right, it sounds like. Yes?
Well, here's what you can say. The first case that we know of in the United States was an individual who lived outside of Seattle, had been in Wuhan, and starts traveling home from Wuhan on January 10th. So, in fact, this is before any travel restrictions are put in place by Trump, which he to this day continues to claim slowed or stopped the flow of cases into the United States and saved America from what would have been, he says, a far worse epidemic. But in fact, we know cases were already coming to the United States even before any travel restrictions were put in place. Can we blame Xi Jinping? Can we blame Donald Trump? I think two very flawed, very egotistical leaders who require sycophants around them, who both abhor bad news, like to have always good news coming from their underlings, and reject those that report to them failures. Both these leaders made a series of stupid decisions or ignored problems for far too long and put the whole world in peril as a result.
Or in the case of America, even sold theories of it being not as bad as it is as an element in the culture war to ignite Trump's base. Because meanwhile, back in America, at the same time as the story you were just telling from China, the first reported case was identified in the United States, as you know, in someone who had returned from Wuhan. And on January 22nd, President Trump said this.
We have it totally under control. It's one person coming in from China, and we have it under control. It's going to be just fine.
Now, maybe he could be excused for having said that on January 22nd, but as late as February 25th, Trump's economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, on CNBC said this.
As far as the U.S. is concerned, when you look at this, I mean, you had a little higher headcount on the infections because of the cruise ship people coming off. We have contained this. We have contained this. I won't say airtight, but pretty close to airtight.
We have contained this pretty close to airtight. He said that on February 25th. And the next day, Trump said this.
It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear. You know, it could get worse before it gets better. It could maybe go away. We'll see what happens. Nobody really knows.
So, Lori, there are your Twin Peaks.
Well, you know, let me go back to your prior question about, well, don't the Republicans have some, you know, those who are claiming China covered this up and imperiled America, don't they have some truth to what they're saying? Let me back up and say this. I don't have the entire CIA's intelligence apparatus behind me, but I knew in December that we were looking at a potentially extremely dangerous crisis. And certainly WHO was already activated and concerned. And certainly there were scientists all over the world that were saying, this is not looking like a outbreak that's going to stay remote. It is dangerous, dangerous situation. And we now know that the intelligence community made a report saying just that well before the first case came to the United States that we know of, and warned the White House, but was ignored. So any attempt to claim that the cover-up that we, yes, was going on and did come from the very top in China in December and early January, any attempt to say that that is why then Trump gets away with saying it's only one case, then later saying it's only 15 cases, and then saying it's going to go away with weather. It's just going to, April's going to come and it'll get warm and the virus will just disappear. All of, you can't weigh one against the other and claim that one excuses the behavior of the other. Mm-hmm. Both of these deeply flawed leaders put us in the global pickle that we're in right now.
And Larry in Dumas, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Hi there, Brian. Good morning, Lori. I was wondering, with regards to the World Health Organization, how complicit are they in this? In that, my understanding was that Taiwan, in ringing the alarms at the same, well before China did, they ignored what Taiwan was saying to the extent that he suppressed Taiwan's warnings and alarms and went instead with China's interpretation of the facts on the ground. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you very much. And we know that President Trump this week has been making a point of criticizing the World Health Organization. We know he's trying to distract attention from his own failures, but is he also right when he says the WHO is partly responsible for being too China-centric, as Trump puts it, and to Larry's question?
So Larry's partly right, and everybody's partly right, and partly wrong. You have to ask yourself, what is the charter of the World Health Organization? What are the limits on its capacity? WHO, under its 1948 charter, serves countries, nation states. It doesn't serve individuals, citizens, NGOs, or non-nation states. Taiwan has never been certified as a nation state in the UN system. So Taiwan is not actually a member of the World Health Organization. And China has always asserted that if Taiwan were made a member independent of Beijing, this would be the equivalent of a diplomatic war. So it's always been a tremendously awkward situation. I mean, for decades, the relationship between Taiwan and the whole UN system, and in particular WHO. The second part of that is, since it is an institution that has to take the word of a nation state and respond accordingly, they had their hands tied in terms of accepting data from Beijing and claims about the epidemic that most of us thought were obviously false at the time, and then passing them on as accurate numbers, accurate statements.
If you knew it was false, why were their hands tied and had to accept it?
Because First of all, WHO cannot enter any country without that country's permission, just as our CDC cannot enter any state without the state's permission. And no, China was not giving them permission to enter. So there was no way for them to independently investigate what was going on in Wuhan until very far into the epidemic, well into the end of February, when they finally allowed a team in. And secondly, I mean, I saw in the SARS epidemic what these so-called independent teams ended up looking like, and they were, you know, dragged around by the nose by Communist Party bosses who made sure they never saw anything that really mattered. And that's another awkward situation. I mean, they're not like, you know, intelligence officers. They can't go in secretly and smoke out what's going on. Now, if anybody who actually went through and sat through all the press conferences that WHO was holding in January, as I did, you would know that, in fact, they were constantly being questioned about this, that all of us were asking, why are you believing these numbers? Why should any of us believe these numbers? Why are you believing these claims? Isn't it clear that you wouldn't have spillover already in Hong Kong and spillover already in Singapore and so on? And as I note in my New Republic article, there was an outside investigation team that did go in, involved researchers, highly credible researchers from Hong Kong, together with Zhang Nanshan from Guangzhou. They went into Wuhan very early and came back saying there's human-to-human transmission, there's sick healthcare workers, this is a big deal. And at that point, Hong Kong shut its border, or started to, took a sort of rolling set of shutdowns on its border to stop the flow of mainland Chinese into Hong Kong in hopes of slowing any possible outburst of
and
the
so
epidemic.
And so one quick
there.
Follow-up on that point, because Trump says, in blaming the WHO, that they criticized him when he took maybe the one early action that he can legitimately pat himself on the back for, which was closing off travel from China to the United States. He says the WHO called him xenophobic for that.
Well, here again, you know, the United States was one of the key players in pushing through the international health regulations, which were passed by all the WHO member states in 2005. And under the international health regulations, when WHO declares a public health emergency of international concern, other countries are not supposed to carry out actions that penalize the economy and the travel of the relevant nation. So what actually happened was the very same day that WHO declared the international health regulations, Donald Trump declared he was shutting down travel from China and starting to block various Chinese flights or place restrictions on the movement of Chinese travelers. And this was, you know, just flagrantly thumbing his nose at the international health regulations, which the U.S. had helped to write.
Though maybe in that case also the most prudent public health measure to take?
Well, we now know there's no relationship between airport shutdown and slowing the spread of this disease. In fact,
is that true?
Yeah. In fact, there's a chart I recommend people go to on the Council on Foreign Relations website, CFR.org, put together a chart mapping when countries instituted travel restrictions and what was the status of their COVID outbreak at the time and how did it progress through those shutdowns. And you actually see that the countries that took the toughest shutdown stances have now the largest epidemics, including the United States. And you would think, well, why would that be the case? Weren't you keeping cases out? Well, no. The problem is, if you're slowing down the flow of cases into your country, you can't act as if that's the end of the problem. If you let that be your Band-Aid, instead of building up a whole preparedness, building up capacity to be ready, building up testing, building up everything you need in order to actually fight the virus when it isn't on your soil and is exploding, then all you've done with travel restrictions is, you know, a phony little sieve, a little cover that prevented you from having to do the more difficult and costly measures.
Stuff. Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with science journalist Laurie Garrett. Hi, Cassius.
Hey, good morning. As insane as this sounds, we're risking SARS 3.0 and 4.0, which could be even more contagious and more deadly, happening as long as we allow any of these wildlife trade markets to continue anywhere on Earth. We need like a mass meeting of all the UN and the all world leaders to agree to ban all these, you know, wildlife markets the planet over, wherever they might be.
And I'm going to leave it there because we're running out of time. Let me give our listeners a little background on this, and I guess we'll have to end on this. The Chinese government says that the virus originated in a so-called live animal wet market. Suddenly the world is learning about those wet markets, and we have a caller, a taxi driver, who I know from his previous calls, a taxi driver from Brooklyn is calling for shutting down the world's wet markets. Your article says genetic evidence hints that the intermediary animal was a kind of anteater called a pangolin, which you also describe as an endangered species and the most trafficked animal in the world. I never heard of pangolins before your article. So what makes them the most trafficked animals in the world, and should we shut down the wet markets to protect people in the future?
So shutting down the wet markets and dealing with the illegal trafficking in wild animals, which is more likely to be relevant in this case, if it is pangolins, it has been long advocated. There is an organization called One Health, a whole movement, One Health, that says there is one health threat that starts from animals and goes all the way through. And you can't separate human safety from animal safety, from veterinary safety, from livestock, etc. And that is certainly the case with all recent outbreaks, even including influenza. They all pass through animals before they get to us. And those animals may or may not be killed by the virus. They may just be carriers. But that passage is crucial to altering the virus in ways that become more dangerous to our species. Now, in this case, the pangolin is a very gentle, all they eat is ants. They have these big scales. If you looked at them, you might think they were more like a reptile, but they're actually mammals. And the scales are made roughly out of the same stuff as your fingernails. So you could think of them as having giant fingernails. And across much of China, there's widespread belief that those fingernails have medicinal qualities and that the meat of the pangolin is somehow very special to eat. And so they have become smuggled and trafficked almost to the point of extinction in many parts of the world. Because of this hunger for them in China. And if that turns out as proven to be the source animal, the original source being bats, but then from bat to pangolin, that would really should draw serious attention to the illegal smuggling and animal trafficking that's going on all over the world.
Lindsey Graham said on Fox this week he's not going to vote to fund the World Health Organization anymore unless they require China or urge China to shut down all the wet markets. Are you saying that that would be irrelevant?
Well, WHO doesn't have that legal capacity. They can't order a country to shut down a market.
Declare it a pandemic risk.
But they have previously, on many occasions, we've seen other diseases come out of wild animal markets. We certainly know that the original HIV was spread via trade in monkey meat, that we've have a long history of concern about this. The big problem is then you're going to pit this issue against the climate change issue, because one of the main reasons that these wild animal and wet markets are still in place with live chickens and live animals purchased and slaughtered in people's kitchens or restaurant kitchens is because people don't have refrigerators. If all Asian people, all Asian households had refrigerators, the impact on our CO2 emissions and climate change would be enormous. And so, you know, one issue pits against another.
Wow. All right. And with that dilemma, we have to leave it with science journalist Lori Garrett, Her 1990s book was The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance. And her new article, a cover story in The New Republic, is how Presidents Trump and Xi set the stage for the coronavirus pandemic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.